We have a very good group of festival devotees here, really a very large group, and we have amazing festivals. Just now the Holi festival will start outside with colors and all, and the devotees won't go wild, or the guests will not go wild. We will just put the colors on the deities who will be outside, and then some surprises, but then there will be people who dance for their pleasure, and good. Savatma Babu, we should start. Would you, this is for 1 hour, right?
Yes, well, you have an extension, so if you feel inspired, you can go over the hour, but usually the class is an hour long.
Good.
There are no restrictions for you. May I introduce you for, yes, those who are very unfortunate and don't know you, but they should know at least something. Sachinandan Swami, a monk in the Bhakti tradition, this is very formal, is known for his significant contribution to the practice of meditation and kirtan. Dedicated to the process of inner transformation, he has spent 50 years in pursuit of genuine spiritual experiences. With messages full of bhakti, humor, and energy, he reaches thousands, while at the same time teaches each and every individual. In his own words, "I like to inspire others to come in touch with the divine so they can live and act from the place of unlimited blissful being." Sachinandan Swami, co-founder of a Braj Care charity in India, and has been integral in building two spiritual communities in Germany. He teaches at the Vrindavan Institute for Higher Education in India and the Bhaktivedanta College in Belgium. He has published several books, dozens of articles, and gives retreats all year round in Europe, North America, and India. I wanted a little more personal thing. You joined when you were very young, right? You were 15 years old?
Yes, yes, yes. And,
can you tell us a brief account of how did you meet the devotees?
I would love to do so. Let me just maybe do one thing. You can see behind me here, dressed like a cowherd boy, is Gaurahari, the temple president of our community. And they will start the festivities in 1 minute. So I have to just tell him one word, and then I will request you. Sorry, the formal introduction has come into something very informal, but soon we will be on the Bhagavatam.
I think you should start without me. This will be this will be 1 hour long.
Okay.
And you just take my role, explain everything.
Oh, we could sweet a little bit, and yeah, then when you after come, you can do the small, like we plan, but you come when you come.
I come when I come. That's very good. Fine. Yes, I came to Krishna consciousness because of a mystical experience, I should say. I had met the first devotees who started our temple in London, in Hamburg. They had gone to Hamburg for Harinam Sankirtan. And I stood there as a child, maybe 14 years old, 13 years old, and looked at them. And at the end, I asked one of them, it turned out it was Tamakrishna Maharaj, if he could please write down the letters of the song which they had sung. I wanted to sing it also. And he obliged, he wrote down the Maha Mantra, and I took this with me, this piece of paper with the Maha Mantra. And whenever I felt as a child grief, distress, anxiety, I would chant the Maha Mantra and immediately experience a divine presence. I can only express it in this way. And then when I was pressurized to in my education to choose a path which would bring me to a wealthy and influential position in German society. I felt really just, I was not sure. I felt the pressure and I chanted the holy name and that for a long time, maybe 2 hours. And then I knew from a place where there's no erring that my life was meant to become a monk. So then I had to wait a little bit until also my parents were convinced, after all I was still minority age, and I joined the temple in London. I met Prabhupada, and and I tested Prabhupada. I was thinking, I'm going to give my life to this person. I need to first find out if he is, if he can live up to the standard of a self-realized soul. And Prabhupada did something very wonderful to convince me. And that is maybe the subject for another discussion, because we want the Bhagavatam this morning. But thank you for asking, Savatma.
Okay, Maharaj, so take it away. We gave you verse 35. Are you okay with that?
Yes. Yes. Oh, I will chant the mantra Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, and maybe we can all chant it 3 times together. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We are reading today from the 4th canto, chapter 25, text 35, and it will be completely different than you expect it to be. Ete shakaya sakyo me naranayas chamanada suptayam vijagapti nagoyam palayam purim. It is that mystical lady, later we find out her name is Puranjani, who addresses King Puranjana after Puranjana had asked her, "You are surrounded with us by a snake, you have all these attendants, who are they and who are you?" So Puranjani, this lady, speaks, "My dear gentleman, all these men and women with me are known as my friends, and the snake, who always remains awake, protects the city even during my sleeping hours. So much I know. I do not know anything beyond this." Puranjana, this is the purport, inquired from the woman about those 11 men and their wives and the snake. The woman gave a brief description of them. She was obviously without full knowledge of her surrounding men and women and the snake. As stated before, the snake is the vital force of the living being. This vital force always remains awake, even when the body and the senses become fatigued and do not work. Even in the state of unconsciousness, when we sleep, the snake or the life force remains intact and awake. Consequently, we dream when we sleep. When the living entity gives up this material body, the vital force still remains intact and is carried to another material body. This is called transmigration or change of the body, and we have come to know this process as death. Actually, there is no death. The vital force always exists with the soul. And when the soul is awakened from so-called sleep, he can see his 11 friends or the active senses and the mind with their various desires, which are like their wives. The vital life force remains. Even during our sleeping hours, we can understand the virtue of our breathing process, that the snake, I have said it wrongly, even during our sleeping hours, we can understand by virtue of our breathing process that the snake lives by eating the air that passes within this body. Air is exhibited in the form of breathing, and as long as breath is there, one can understand that the sleeping man is alive. Even when the gross body is asleep, the vital force remains active and alive to protect the body. Thus, the snake is described as living and eating air to keep the body fit for life. Jai Srila Prabhupada, Jai Srila Prabhupada, Jai Srila Prabhupada, by whose grace I'm trying to address you with something meaningful. Our time now here in Germany is 1:15. We had our Bhagavatam class in the morning, and it was a shared Bhagavatam class between His Holiness Krishna Chaitra Maharaj and myself. And Maharaj was the first speaker, and he said something which I would like to repeat today here in my own words. It is some, you could say, preliminary remarks about the Bhagavatam, which I think will help you in your effort to go deeper into the Bhagavatam. Then I will talk directly about the verse, if there is still time, but I will speak in a very concentrated way, so I need your full focus, and therefore I think I can make it in time. So, Maharaj suggested that there are four ways in which we can approach our reading of the Bhagavatam and make it into a life-changing experience. The first suggestion he gave was that when you sit in a class, you should make yourself familiar with the text which the lecturer will talk about. In other words, if tomorrow the text 4th canto, 25th chapter, verse 36 comes, then today I will read this text already. I will think about it, I will prepare it, prepare myself, so that when tomorrow this text is actually discussed, I have some insight already in the text. I have engaged with the text. And when the lecturer will talk about this text, then my understanding will be enhanced. I will also be more attentive, especially when the purport is read, because I will recognize some of the points and It won't be in one ear, out of the other, but I will reflect about it. That was the first suggestion, which I found very relevant, because often when the Bhagavatam speaker reads the verse and the purport, not so much stays in our mind, because it's just so new and it meets us totally unprepared. Whereas when we have reflected about it before time, we will engage in a very profitable, beneficial way with it. We will recognize, we will see different angles. The second point Maharaj raised is to understand the context. The third was resonance, and the fourth principle was example. I will explain, it will become very clear. Let's go to the second point, context. The Bhagavatam is an ongoing narration, and each verse can be understood as one part, a building part, a building block of the grand subjects the Bhagavatam establishes. So just like in house, building a house from rocks, we need to know what has been done already, what foundation has been laid. We also require to understand the context if we want to understand the individual verse. Like in this case, for instance, when Savatma requested me to speak about this verse, I again read the beginning of the chapter, and I did understand that yes, Puranjana represents the living entity, and he goes in search of a new dwelling place, and while he is still outside his new body, he's not yet, has not taken birth in the city of nine gates, he's still outside of the body, he meets the life force which is required to inhabit the body. Let us say, metaphorical language of the Bhagavatam, he meets this lady who later becomes his queen, who is surrounded by her servants, the 11 senses. So if I would have just read this verse, I would not have understood what I could share now with you. But because I studied the context, it made so much more sense to me. Also, I have, because I'm a reader of the Bhagavatam, I've studied the overall context. Why is this discussed at this point here in the Bhagavatam, and so on? But I don't want to go so broad and so far, because we are talking here first about a method to study the Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam. Context, very important. Next point, resonance. This is a word which Maharaj has created. It means to reflect and see, did I hear anything similar to what I hear here that could enrich my understanding of the Bhagavatam? You will see in the Bhagavatam that Shukadev takes on a few key themes, and by looking at them in a different way, he brings out things which cannot be seen at first glance. So this subject here, the soul entering a body, and then the senses and the life force group around it, is of course a very well-known subject or theme that is repeated at various places. For instance, in the sixth canto, when we hear about the son of Shitraketu giving up one, entering into a body, and it's one of the main themes of spiritual philosophies. But by stopping consciously and looking for things that resonate with it, I can enter the ocean of the Bhagavatam much better. So I look for subjects that resonate with it. I might even go to the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna speaks in the 15th chapter about this phenomenon. Mamaivangso jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana, that the eternal living entity takes on a body, and around it there is this group of senses. And from there I can study the 15th chapter. I can really get a comprehensive picture of the Bhagavatam world if I look for things that resonate with the subject. The third or the fourth point is Maharaj offered is we need examples, and the Bhagavatam is full of examples of the soul taking on a new body. What immediately came to mind just now was this passage which I already narrated, and Maharaj Bharata, do you remember the king emperor who left the world, but the world did not leave him? It's so much our own case, you know. We left the world, but the world stayed inside in terms of desires and projections and all these other things. Then he sees this young deer, which is an orphan, and becomes the father, mother, sister, and everything for the deer, and eventually falls from his spiritual practice. But then he takes a new birth, after a third birth, and he is knowing intuitively that bad association disrupts the process of the soul and the advancement of the soul, and he becomes very careful. He pretends to be a dumb person with whom no one wants to associate, just to be free. So yes, this is an example of this subject. And all of a sudden, the Bhagavatam opens and shows me many things. As children, we had these stand-up books. I do not know if you have them in America. You would have a book like this one. Then you would open it. This is not a stand-up book. It's the Bhagavatam. But as children, we would open it, and wow, there would be a forest with green trees and some elves in between, and so on. So the Bhagavatam can also become for you a stand-up book, in the sense that when you apply this process on the stage of your comprehension or imagination, a whole inner reality, Bhagavatam informed reality rises, and you walk very happily through the Bhagavatam. Again, the process, if you want to take notes, this is a good time. Study the context in which a particular verse in the Bhagavatam appears. See where you find some resonance. I read something here in the Bhagavatam. Possibly even open the Bhagavatam there and read it again for clarity and deeper insights. And finally, look for examples that exemplify the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita, that, so to say, put life into the skeleton, and hands and lungs and heart and everything, so that Bhagavatam becomes alive for you and is not just a book that you have to read in order to educate yourself further. I found this very, very nice, and the other recommendation is to make your Bhagavatam morning classes more alive, more inspiring. Read the text in before. It only takes 2 minutes, or if it's a really long purport, maybe 3.5 minutes, and then you have already engaged with the text and you can continue where this is. Hare Krishna. This was a preliminary. Oh, I will learn your English language. Don't worry. This was some preliminary remarks. Now I would like to go into the text itself and go and show you how a person could engage with the Bhagavatam text personally after having done all these other things. Let me again read to you the text. My dear gentlemen, this is what this woman who is accompanied by the snake of life force and the men and women of the senses says, my dear gentlemen, all these men and women with me are known as my friends, and the snake, who always remains awake, protects this city even during my sleeping hours. So much I know, I do not know anything beyond this. This is very, Prabhupada speaks very gently. The woman says, I have no idea about anything else. I'm sorry, my knowledge is very limited. So she speaks really, let us focus now on the most amazing and astonishing feature of this analogy. The snake. It's a woman. We have heard about women who have leopards next to them. My auntie's friend had a black panther on a leash next to her. High society, so why always boring dogs? This friend of my auntie was thinking black panther is more in style. But we have not heard about a woman so far with a huge snake with 5 heads, we learn later. The snake is the life force, the prana, which is active in 3 stages of consciousness. Also, I should correct myself, in 4 stages in which our consciousness operates. And I would like to tell you how this life force, which is here depicted as the snake, is active. The first state of consciousness is when we are awake. It's called Jagrata. At that time, we are interacting with the world through our knowledge acquiring senses. We are also interacting with our active senses and with the mind. These are the 11 men and women which surround this lady. There's a second level of consciousness. It's called Svapna, the dreaming state of consciousness. At that time, our gross body is not active, but our subtle body is active and roams around in dreamland and has hope, good and bad encounters in the dreamland, which either inspire us or which make us frightened or sad. During both of these states, the life force is either empowering the senses of the physical body, that's in wakeful state, or is empowering mainly the subtle body, which is doing the dreaming state, or both. Now comes a third level of consciousness, which I personally find most interesting for our discussion. This state of consciousness is the deep dreamless state. During that time, when we are not interacting either with our physical nor with our sensual body, at that time the life force is still there, otherwise we would die. It is said 250 second part of the life force is still empowering the body. We are kind of hibernating. The mental body is not active, nor the gross body, but it's still going on. The prana is still working. It doesn't need such high energy, so therefore only a small part of our whole capacity works. This dreamless state of deep sleep is described in the Upanishads as very interesting. During this time, the soul experiences the effulgence of the Supersoul of Paramatma. We bathe, so to say, in the light of God, but we are not conscious, so there is no conscious interaction with God. We are in deep sleep and nothing is activated in us. But when we wake up and someone sees us, they say, "You look so blissful. What happened to you?" And we say ignorantly, "Oh, I had a deep sleep. I really slept very well." What happened is our soul, without any memory, without any awareness, had contact with the effulgence of the Paramatma. These are three states of material consciousness: wakefulness, dreaming, and deep sleep. However, there's a fourth state of consciousness, which is called in Sanskrit Turiya, Jagrata, Svapna, and Sushupti, were the first three. But now, Turiya, the fourth level of consciousness. It is when the soul is awakened from its material forgetfulness and engages in an active relationship with Krishna. Our soul always has this active relationship there, but it can become dormant. I would like to give you one example. A jewel has always a light inside, But when it is caked over by mud, the light cannot manifest itself. So when we are covered with the material influences, our dasatva, that means our servitude to the Lord, which is always there, is covered. But it is always there in a latent or dormant form. And I would like to give you another example. Two examples come from the Brahma Sutra or Vedanta Sutra. When you have a young boy, the young boy has virility in its dormant state. Now I will turn to my English-speaking audience. Do you understand the word virility? Do I say it correctly? Does it ring?
Yes, it's correct, Maharaj.
It's something like sexual potency, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yes, but it's sleeping in a young boy. It is not, the young boy has no idea of the difference between men and women. As of yet, he feels nothing in particular, even when he sees an undressed woman, maybe his sister, and so on, or his niece, or I don't know, goes to a bathing, where people bathe and change dress. He doesn't feel anything, but then when he crosses over puberty, he all of a sudden, this male bhava and women bhava are understandable and comprehensible to him. So in the same way, this is an example, Jiva Goswami makes this point. We have, in a latent form, love of Krishna, but it's just so covered with material identifications that it is as good as non-existence. And if we don't meet a very good bhakta who can awaken this, it will remain slumbering will continue to slumber. This, in the fourth level of consciousness, Turiya, this original feeling of dasatva, I'm your servant, Hari, Hari, is definitely there. So this is how the life force works with us as long as we are in the material world. It works with us in the four levels of consciousness, it empowers us, it energizes us on this wakeful level, the dreaming level, the deep sleep level, and also if we should ever become fully Krishna conscious, then on the Turiya level, the fourth level. This is something I wanted to explain about this verse, and I would like to end with something that I feel is encouraging for you. We have started our little class with some tips that could empower or enhance your Bhagavatam experience. We have delved with one particular verse. Now I want to make a comment about the times in which we live. I cannot speak for those of my listeners who are in America, because I'm not in America, and I'm not a man who studies newspapers and news, but I can speak for Europe. And somehow, at least economically, every part of the world is connected with another. It may be of significance. We do live in a time, we feel this very much in Europe, where definite changes take place. When you go now in the streets of our town, you will find everywhere signs, please don't turn up your heating system so much. We don't have gas from Russia at the moment. There's a sabotage against, or let me say boycott. Is it called boycott or sanctions? Sanctions. You will find when you go now over the into the shops, you cannot get flowers. We wanted to make pizza, and our devotees tried in four different shops to buy flour. But if here in Germany we have been dependent on imports which came from those countries who grow a lot of grains and so on. So I said, no problem, there are so many good recipes besides pizza, so and so on. Things change visibly, but also people become worried. Oh, we first had this pandemic, now we have a war right before the doors of our country, and I will go in a few days to one of our temples where we have 100 refugees from the Ukraine, and we take care of them in all ways, of course. What else to do when people are in need? There are some visible signs of change, but also if you would study astrology, they will say one period has come to an end and another period is yet to start. It's very important that we as devotees of Krishna position ourselves in this time of change. And I would like to talk about this by telling you something which Burijan Prabhu, a good friend of mine, always says. He says, he quotes, there were once two twins in Australia, I think, identical twins. One was a criminal drunkard and the other was a very responsible surgeon who sometimes went into countries which were not so developed and did surgery for free. So an interviewer wanted to interview the two twins who were so different. And he first found out their family. He didn't find out who was their mother, but their father was also a criminal who was a drunkard. He had often visits, short-term and long-term visits in the prison and so on. So they asked the first twin, why did you become like this? And that, you know, a criminal drunkard. The twin said, I had no choice with the father like this. Then they went to the surgeon, who was a twin brother, but who was a surgeon in there. And how did you become like this? And he said, I had no choice with a father like this. Same situation, two different choices. The first thought, well, if my father was like this, and by default, I have to be like this. The second made another choice. Well, my father lived like this, a life of misery, a life where he could not contribute to the lives of others. And I could see that this is not a good design for life. What choice did I have? I had to do something different and use my energy properly. I think in this little modern story, we find a very important element that is free choice. And the Bhagavatam and the regular study of the Bhagavatam informs us or gives us all those inner tools which we need to, first of all, know we have a choice, and second of all, to make the choice which we want to experience in our life. It was very nice to spend the time with you. Maybe you can hear there is a kirtan, but it's still not so loud. It's outside, and they are expecting me to swing the Lord. There's a big swing, and Radha's Madan Mohan are there. We have 28 fantastic devotees from Amsterdam today here. We have devotees even from Switzerland here. Somehow they were all attracted like bees to Radha Madan Mohan. But before I leave you, I want to say that I have been a few times your guest in the Gita Nagari community. I so much appreciate your community and what you do to maintain this project. In fact, once for almost 1 year, I was living on your ghee that is produced in Gita Nagari, and I was connected with you. My last time where I visited your community was, I forget all this time. It was with Pandava Senas.
2017.
I'm very much, you are my heroes. You keep the community alive and afloat with your nice devotion. And please, I know it sometimes, this is not recognized, the sacrifice which devotees do who maintain a temple, but I'm very, very impressed, and I cannot wait to see you. We are coming to America in the summer, if Krishna allows. We think I have a visa and everything. I don't know if Gita Nagari is on the schedule.
It should be, Maharaj. You're coming in June to New Vrindavan, and we are only 4 hours away, so please come and visit.
I'm looking at... Thank you for the invitation, Savatma. I'm looking at my assistant, Gaur Krishna, and he says the schedule is full, isn't it? So, if something drops, I will definitely come, but I have another suggestion. If you have time and you wish to come, we have this very nice holy name retreat. Savatma Prabhu was... I think also sometimes with us, and it would be my great privilege to serve all of you in that time in New Vrindavan. It ends with a 24-hour kirtan. So if you have time, energy, then maybe you get on one of your bullock drawn chariots and come from Gita Nagari to Villa Vrindavan or something else. We are also for Ratha Yatra in New York. That's also something. I heard that is also not so far away from Gita Nagari. So I'm also extremely happy to see Ekatma Prabhu and Rajalila, Hari Bol. Let me see who else I know. Jagannath Pandit Prabhu, Bhubrit Prabhuji, Achyuta Dasi, Devaki Priti, Jana Vatsala Devidasi and Prema Sambuddha. Wow, Prema Sambuddha, that's the best name. Gauri is there, Agari Krishna, and Kessing. Kenneth, you look so young. Yashoda and others are there. Linda, wow, the bridge goes in over the ocean of birth and death. And Nandini Kishori is there. Queen Nyugyen, Queenie even. Wonderful. Yashoda Dev Prabhu and Taraka and everyone else. Somehow we are family. And there is Savadma Prabhu with his kind smile. Does any one of you have a burning question, or should we close this?
Well, we don't want to delay. There are so many devotees waiting for you, and we are thankful that you gave us more than Lava Matra, more than 1/11th of a second of your association. But if this is not too imposing, I would like to make a part two where you can perhaps not on a festival day address us again and keep us enlivened.
Please do so. I think we are in contact. You have the number of Gokrishna, same channel which you use to get in contact. All the best for you, everyone. My good wishes are with you. And remember this suggestion to enhance your Bhagavatam study. Study the context, see what resonates in the text. Another word for this is, here comes my difficult, intertextuality. Ha! If you don't, I know English, intertextuality, how the texts connect with each other. You can learn that and then look for examples which give, let us say, life, practical life to the subject you have just read. So I thank you all very much. I will have to run now. Hare Krishna, Hari Bo, Jai Srila Prabhupada, Hari Bo.
Thank you, Maharaj. Thank you, Maharaj. Hari Bo.